On the first day of the week, two of Jesus' followers were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days?" He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who is a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him. Then he said to them, "Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?" Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, because it is almost evening, as the day is now nearly over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at table with them, he took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?" That same hour they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, "The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon." Then they told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread. The Gospel of the Lord. You ever had an Emmaus experience? We just heard Luke's telling of the inaugural Emmaus experience. It involved a guy named Cleopas and one of his buddies, disciples of Jesus, Luke tells us, though not members of the 12, not part of the inner circle. But it seems that on that first Easter day, they found themselves walking along the road from Jerusalem to Emmaus. I have to say, this little detail is a little frustrating because we don't really know where Emmaus is. We only know what Luke tells us, that it was connected by a road with Jerusalem. The distance given by Luke varies in different ancient manuscripts, which makes it a little confusing, and in fact, it's made more ambiguous by different interpretations. It's generally assumed that the Gospel says that it was 60 stadia from Jerusalem, which is usually translated in English translations as 7 miles. That's the most common translation. It's one we got this morning. Over the centuries, several locations have been proposed as the actual Emmaus, and certain places have claimed as such for themselves, but no archaeologist or historian has ever deemed such to be established definitively. Now, the fog over the identity of Emmaus is a little frustrating, but it opens for us really a lot of possibilities, and I'm going to get to those in a moment. So what were these disciples doing? They may well have been escaping. They were devastated by what has happened. It's always been curious to me that they stayed after the crucifixion and they left after the resurrection in sadness, but they didn't get it. Events would soon prove they should have stayed. It's as though they had closed the book before reading the last chapter. One can intuit, really, that they had lost their faith. The whole thing about Jesus seemed to them maybe to be a fraud. They probably felt like losers. After all, they had been following what seemed now to be the wrong guy and had probably been ridiculed for it. So they were going back to lives probably of some desperation. After all, they were returning home to a world where the Israelites were oppressed by the occupying Roman army. Jesus was supposed to have fixed this. The Messiah, among other things, was supposed to be a military leader. But off they go, home. Then that stranger appeared. The Gospels don't often portray Jesus as speaking tongue-in-cheek. But we get it here, right? Whatever are you discussing as you walk along the road? It's almost as if he's coming up to, hey guys, what's up? A little tongue-in-cheek. For reasons unknown, they did not recognize the teacher, so they responded with some shock. Look, mister, are you the only one in Jerusalem who doesn't read the newspapers? Have you not heard anything? They bring the resurrected but unrecognized Lord up to speed on these things that had happened to him. Jesus' reaction to their story, more specifically the end of their story, is swift, and frankly, it feels a little brutal. Oh, how foolish you are, he says. It's like he's thinking, these followers of mine have room temperature IQs. What is going on? I have to constantly tell them everything over and over again. Nonetheless, he does it once again. Beginning with Moses, Luke tells us, and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. Still, nothing. They don't seem to get it. Well, about the time he finishes, Emmaus is on the horizon. Jesus pretends he's going to push on. It's almost like a continuation of this tongue-in-speech conversation he'd had, tongue-in-cheeks conversation he'd had. But they beg him to stay, despite the fact they still don't know who this stranger is. To their credit, this was not an atypical act of hospitality. The roads were dangerous at night, and it was not uncommon to invite somebody into your home for shelter. But they still didn't know who he was. No, stay with us, they said. The day is almost done. Now, Jesus was waiting for the invitation. It's notable that he didn't force themselves on him. He tends not to do that now. But once asked, he accepts the invitation to stay with them, which is something he does tend to do now. Once at table, Jesus takes charge. At this table, the guest has become the host, and the hosts have become the guest. This is unusual in and of itself. But Luke tells us that when he was at table with them, he took bread, he blessed and broke it, and he gave it to them. That sounds familiar. And then it happened. Suddenly, in the action of breaking bread, these two kind of formerly forlorn disciples see who it is. It is the one they have been following, the resurrected Lord. How do they know that? Scriptures don't tell us. They just tell us that their eyes were opened. And of course, it is at that moment that they recognize him that he disappears. Instantly, he's gone. But nearly as instantly, Cleopas and his friend realize that this news was something that needed to be told. So they didn't wait for morning. They got on the dangerous roads and went back to Jerusalem, and they found the others to tell them what had happened. It's a really fascinating story. And it's an important one, not just for Luke's gospel witness, but I think for our lives as children of God. I mentioned a few minutes ago that the vagary of the location of Emmaus would open up some possibilities. What I meant by that is that it gives us some depth to work with as we dive into our own understanding and our own application of this story. Because within the context of this passage, the road itself has been used for generations as a metaphor for all kinds of things. Just like these disciples in their anguish, we all walk the road with troubles. Grief, disappointment, failure, broken relationships, poor health, bad decisions, addiction, fear, you name it. We carry these things with us, some more than others, but it's all there. And as we walk this road, we long for Jesus to be with us. to the extent that we are not able to see and embrace the resurrection, we are walking alone. The metaphor that always resonates with me in this story is the struggle between doubt and faith. Now, those of you who were here last week know that I gave an illegal sermon. It was only illegal to the extent that the bulletin didn't say there should be a sermon, but I preached one anyway. Short, I think it was short. Sometimes I get going, but I think it was short. I could not resist talking about Doubting Thomas, whom I believe fully should be renamed Thomas the Faithful. Sure, Thomas doubted, but he accepted his doubt. He even acknowledged out loud his doubt, but he didn't wander away with this doubt. He stayed with the budding community of faith that he was a part of. He listened to the story that they told of what they had witnessed when Jesus came to them while he was gone. He most certainly reflected on it. It was the only way he could work through it, the only way he could come to that sure and certain faith that proclaims my Lord and my God. The process was for him, I think, his Emmaus experience. He was walking the road of doubt, but he found Jesus Christ on that road. Now, this might predate it would have been the same day as the two Gospels tell the story. But nonetheless, I think it works as his Emmaus experience. So I'll ask the question again. You ever had an Emmaus experience? I suspect most of us would say no, not like this. But let's think about what happened in this Gospel passage. The sacred story was told. Jesus was the hope of salvation. The evil men killed him, and now there are rumors that he has risen. Then the story is explained, beginning with Moses and all the prophets. Jesus interpreted to them the things about himself in the scriptures. This is sounding familiar. Then Jesus and company gather at table. Bread is taken, blessed, broken, and given. And the disciples recognize the risen Christ present in their midst. You don't need a degree in theology to see that this is a model for what we do every Sunday. We do it here at St. Mark's, and the Church of Jesus Christ worldwide does it as well. That sacred story is told. We've heard the scriptures read. The scriptures are interpreted. That's the homily. And the taking of bread, blessing, breaking, giving, all of that is what happens in the Eucharist at the altar. We do this every Sunday. The Eucharist is not an escape any more than Emmaus ended up being an escape. The Eucharist should instead be a source of peace in the midst of a troubled world. A source of connection with he who is the Eucharist. It does not remove the troubled world. It gives us strength to live in that world. When you come to church, don't endeavor to leave at home your troubles, your tragedies, your fears, your sins, your inadequacies. Bring your whole life before the Lord, as Thomas and Cleopas and his fellow traveler did. Nothing is too messy for God. Nothing is too dirty for God. Bring it all. And let the resurrected Christ, the one we find each and every week in the breaking of the bread, let the resurrected Christ be your strength and your hope and your joy. So has anyone here had an Emmaus experience? I would say everyone, every week, and we are in the midst of another. Amen.